Paul in, well, between Bakersfield and Sacramento on 8:40 a.m. Paul, are you in, like, in the Borg? How can you be between Bakersfield and Sacramento?
That's several hundred miles.
Hundreds of miles, sir. Please explain.
I am in my vehicle traveling from Bakersfield to Sacramento.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Okay, very good. Don't drive angry. And welcome.
No, I won't.
Go ahead, Paul. Welcome to the show. So
well, thank you very much. It's a very interesting topic that you have here. One of the things that I find very interesting is the way you pose the question. I would think that the onus would be on someone stating a claim to prove their claim. You're mm-hmm. claiming that there is a God.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Then the onus should be upon you to prove that claim. Mm-hmm. Not a, you're asking agnostics and atheists to prove a negative.
Yeah. Well, in this particular phrasing of the
well,
issue,
actually,
yeah, we
Paul,
have.
I'm just interested. There are people who are atheists and agnostics, and I assume they have reasons for doing that. So I would like to know what those reasons are. And typically, I find for those who identify as atheist or agnostic, they have a claim about the way the world is they think is true. It's one of two claims: either that there is no God, or there is no good reason to believe in God. And I'm curious if they believe either of those claims, why they think that they're true.
I would consider myself a non-theist.
Okay.
I believe that there is no proof or factual evidence
okay.
that there is a God. And I believe if someone making a claim, it's interesting that the last caller or two callers before the concept of Santa Claus came
up. Yes.
If someone's going, or unicorns, if you're going to make a claim about something that cannot be seen and or tested, the proof and the onus would lie upon the claim, the person making that claim mm-hmm. to substantiate the statement.
Well, I would say, though, if somebody says there are no good reasons for something, they are making a claim that a certain thing does not exist that many people think does exist. So
I am saying, I can't speak for everyone. My perspective is this. I have seen no valid evidence or proof for the fact that there is a deity.
Paul, you've seen no valid proof or evidence for a deity. Did you come to that conclusion because you've just never seen an argument or proof for God, or because you have seen arguments and proofs, but you find them wanting or incorrect?
I've seen arguments. I've seen no proofs.
What do you mean by a proof?
I mean something, feel, touch, taste, some factual evidence. Something that would hold up to reason or to in a court of law, proof.
So you're saying that for the existence of so if we define God, would you agree that God is the infinite, transcendent creator of reality who exists immaterial outside of space and time, but sustains reality and is all knowing, all powerful, all good? Would you say that when we're talking about God, that's what we're referring to?
I would believe that would be that's a very good description of what the common general consensus would be, what a God is.
Okay, yes. So we're looking for evidence for this kind of being, but if God is infinite and not made of matter and exists beyond space and time, is infinite but sustains physical reality, wouldn't you agree then any evidence we would find for God, we can't like see God's body or you know, get a chunk of his clothes and say, ha ha, we found him. It would have to be some other kind of evidence that would lead back to God. You can't actually see him with a microscope or telescope, right?
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I believe that's kind of a trap argument. If we can both come up with a definition for
yeah.
something we know that is unreal, let's come up with a definition for Santa Claus.
Okay.
He wears a red suit. He wears a white beard. We uh-huh. both agree upon the definition. Just because we agree upon the definition of something imaginary does not lend credibility to the imaginary thing we just...
No, of course not. Of course not. I agree with you on that point. But we have to agree on our definition. For example, if we define Santa Claus as just an invisible reality that motivates parents to buy gifts, well, then I would have a hard time disproving or proving that such a thing exists. It would be very difficult to falsify. So we'd have to talk about that a bit more. But if we define Santa as a corporeal being with a big red suit and reindeer and a factory at the North Pole and he slides down the chimney, all these physical facts, we can have evidence for and against him. Now, when it comes to God, though, I guess for me, the best evidence for God, if God is infinite creator of reality, of the universe, is the fact that the universe doesn't have to exist. And things that exist, that begin to exist, or don't have to exist, require explanations. I mean, would you at least agree that something that exists, we ask for explanations for why it exists?
Why it exists?
Yeah.
Not necessarily. How it exists may be a good question. Why it exists? I don't know. That would be my first question.
Well, if you're studying the solar system and you've known all your life that Earth has one moon, but the other planets have many moons, wouldn't you ask the question, well, why are there more moons there than here? We'd seek an, you wouldn't just say, well, just because that's the way it is.
I agree with you. I would. Yes, I would ask that question.
Oh, okay. So then we would ask, you know, if things can be different, we ask the question, well, why? And now we can do the same for even bigger things. You know, why is there a sun? And, well, there's this natural process that would lead to it. There's an ultimate basement question we could ask, though, which is, well, why is there something rather than nothing? Because there could have been nothing. That's easy to imagine. So why is there a universe at all? Would you agree? Is that a valid question to ask?
Certainly. Certainly. Look, certainly. And if I can interject here, you mentioned that when you give corporal attributes to things like Santa and all that, but isn't that what, if we give corporal attributes to Santa Claus and he slides down a chimney and all these things, uh-huh, then we have to provide proof of that. But isn't that what you are doing with your definition of God?
What do you mean?
Oh. Corporal attributes as a father, he has a son, he resides in heaven, he feels this way and that way towards things. Aren't you giving corporal attributes to this belief or idea?
Right. Well, when we speak about God, and the Catechism of the Catholic Church speaks about this, I think in paragraphs 42 and 43, God is so beyond us, it's unimaginable, that God is not just a person up in the sky. God is infinite, unlimited being itself. You know, so God exists as pure goodness, pure being, without flaw, without deficiencies of any kind. And so when we have that, we understand that when we speak about God, we're going to use anthropomorphic language for humans to try to relate to God. We talk about God feeling and thinking and reacting, but God doesn't do that. God, all of God's knowledge is immediately available to him in one timeless perfect moment, and God sustains all of existence. Now, God has chosen to become man. God exists as an eternal relation of persons, Father, Son, Holy Spirit, and one of those persons has become man and has a body. Now, what I was saying about the difference between Santa and God is that there's things about Santa where if Santa existed, we would expect the world to be a certain way. Parents wouldn't go out, have to buy presents, things like that. But the world's not that way, so we can have good evidence there is no Santa. So if God existed, an argument against God would be, well, the world would have to be a certain way. But when I examine the world around me, I think it comports very well with the existence of God, that a world that doesn't have to exist requires an explanation outside of it to say why it's here. A universe that began to exist and has laws of physics designed for intelligent creatures to flourish, those require explanations too beyond the merely material. And I cover all of this in my book, Answering Atheism. But I would say that the evidence for God cannot be, oh, well, we found God in a microscope or telescope. God is a basic foundation of reality, even more basic than space or time itself. Just as you can't see time in a microscope, you can see its effects, or a telescope, you see its effects, you can't see time. So when it comes to God, we would ask, well, what are effects we would associate with God? And I would say a universe or reality that doesn't have to exist requires a creative reality that's without limit beyond space, time, matter, and energy. And so all of the limited world we live in points to an unlimited reality that brought it into existence and sustains it. And there's different proofs for these different arguments, and I'm happy to go through them with another caller or things like that. But my point is, if there is a God and we have this definition, we could know this being exists through the effects we see in the world, namely finite and limited reality.
Paul, thanks for the call. Unfortunately, we can't always use a fine-tooth comb. Sometimes on live radio, with a limit to the time, we have to do a broad-tooth comb. So appreciate your call very much.